Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. The subject is the Whole 30 diet. And we're talking to the co-originator, Melissa Hartwig, who back in 2009 formulated it. And it's been knocking around for a while, but it really has achieved critical mass because it's going viral. A lot of people are talking about it. A lot of people are taking the 30-day challenge to explore the effects on their body of the Whole 30. And let me share with you, before we get back to Melissa, my own experience. It is now, as we record this, the end of March. And that means that I've been following this diet for 3 months. It originally was a 30-day challenge. I wasn't sure it could last for 30 days. But, you know, there's this old song, Hooked on a Feeling. I think, Melissa, you know about that song. maybe that dates you a little bit, but there's a song called Hooked on a Feeling. And I'm hooked on a feeling with this diet. I really enjoy the effects on my body. And in spite of the, you know, logistic challenges of making sure you eat, you know, have the right ingredients on hand and that, you know, when you go to restaurants, it's a little more cumbersome to find the right foods. Even on vacation, I've adhered to the diet. I must admit to having a drink on, you know, New Year's Eve on Super Bowl night a couple of times. But mostly, and that's also part of the diet, is to you know, if you're a social drinker, explore the effect of going 30 days without any alcohol at all. That's, I think, part of what can give your system a reboot or a reset move you towards higher energy and maybe relief from any number of debilitating symptoms. So let's get into, you know, what are some of the effects of this diet. Now, for you, you were a healthy individual, you were doing CrossFit, you know, you wanted to optimize your performance. And so what was it for you? You weren't trying to overcome any kind of medical condition or anything, but how did it affect you?
No, I would have said that I was super healthy. I was relatively lean. I was fit. I was kind of known as like the healthy girl at my office. I thought I ate well. If you had asked me what my relationship with food was, I would have said, you know, I eat to fuel myself for the gym. But what I discovered during those 30 days was that in the absence of the foods that I would normally and very unknowingly kind of subconsciously use to comfort myself, relieve boredom, relieve anxiety, the foods that I kind of used as a reward or as punishment, in the absence of those, it really brought to light the fact that I had a pretty dysfunctional relationship with food, that the way I thought about food wasn't healthy, and it translated into an unhealthy body image, lower self-esteem and self-confidence. So the Whole 30, that first experience back in 2009, was a really profoundly impactful one for me because it brought to light these issues with food that I had never considered, and it forced me to find other ways to comfort myself and relieve anxiety and relieve boredom and reward myself. And that experience really provoked a permanent shift in my relationship with food, one that I've been able to successfully maintain to this day more than 7 years later. So for me, that was really the impetus of wanting to share the Whole 30 with my blog audience, was if I had such a tremendous experience here, I know there are others who will have, I think, hopefully a similar reaction.
And let's not forget also that, you know, alcohol elimination, and you don't have to be, you know, a problem drinker be using alcohol perhaps in a way that is, you know, maybe a little too habitual, maybe getting in the way of some healthier behaviors. Maybe it's got the best of you. And I noticed that, you know, I'm not a problem drinker. I was an occasional drinker, but, you know, some days I'd come home from the office after a particularly challenging day, and the first thing I'd be thinking about, you know, is go to the freezer and, you know, pull out the vodka bottle and, you know, pour myself a couple of fingers of vodka, have a little cocktail as a way to sort of, it was almost like a circuit breaker for the day's stress. And now, because that's sort of off the table, I'll come home, you know, maybe essentially with the same stresses, but instead of doing that, you know, I might, you know, get down on the yoga mat, you know, do some stretches, do some deep breathing, and alleviate stress that way, which I think may be a preferable way to dissipate stress.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, so I'm actually writing my third book right now. It's called Food Freedom Forever, and it's out in October of this year.
But oh, great. That's we'll get you, but you're booked. You're booked.
Okay. Oh, Great. Thank you.
Schedule it.
That exact scenario is something that I discuss in my book, that if you come home and your habit is to reach for that glass of wine after work and it becomes so subconscious and just so ritualistic, you know, what you're looking for is really what you called that circuit breaker. You're looking for a natural break between the stresses of your day and coming home and being relaxed. What else can you do in that moment to satisfy that experience? Mm-hmm. And I think the Whole30 will show you, or at least force you, outside of your traditional habits to find something else to replace it with.
And, you know, some people might say, well, you know, why be such a fuddy-duddy? You know, like alcohol is healthy, you know, it's been, you know, heart healthy and so on and so on. But one of the problems with alcohol use is that it's a bit of a disinhibitor. And that's one of the reasons why when you go to a restaurant, the first thing they want to do is pour you a drink, A, because the profit margin on alcohol is a lot better than the profit margin on, you know, the food or steak. You know, steak is expensive and they can mark it up only a certain amount. Alcohol is cheap and they can mark it up, you know, tenfold. But they also want to do that at the beginning of the meal to disinhibit you so that you will eat more. And that's sort of what alcohol does to some extent, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And we talk about that quite a bit. It's not just the health effects of alcohol. And yes, you can see a study that says that alcohol, regular moderate alcohol consumption improves longevity, which we won't even need to get into discussing, because do I want a longer life or do I want a really healthy life?
Right.
But, you know, on top of the health issues that alcohol can provoke, the blood sugar dysregulation, hormonal imbalance, impact on sleep, impact on testosterone, mm-hmm. it does lower your inhibitions. And I think we can all relate to making poor food choices after a glass or two. You know, all of a sudden, a second glass and ordering the nachos doesn't seem like such a bad idea.
Indeed.
So yeah, that's another reason for pulling it out, putting it back in, and seeing not just how it impacts you physiologically, but what it's doing to you mentally and emotionally, and what it's doing to the rest of your food choices.
And you mentioned sleep, and I think sleep is an important facet of this diet, because I have to say that I'm a champion sleeper. You know, before I went to med school, I did have sleep problems, but after sleep deprivation in med school and during my medical training, I'm a sleeper of opportunity. I can sleep anywhere, anytime. But I have to say that my sleep quality has gone through the roof on this diet, because without alcohol at night and with, you know, perhaps it's a blood sugar balance thing. I'm not even quite sure. Mm-hmm. But and many people do report this on the Whole30, is that sleep quality has improved. You sleep deeper and you have a more restorative sleep. And also when I wake up, I'm ready to go pedal to the metal, and it's been years since I've felt that. I used, you know, as you get older, sometimes it's just harder and harder to warm up. You know, you have to go through that, you know, hour and a half or something to unlimber in the morning before you feel like going to the gym or, you know, doing anything. That latency time from wake up to ready to go has been shortened for me. There's no question.
Yeah, that's really common on the Whole 32. And sometimes sleep gets worse before it gets better as your body kind of adjusts to this new way of eating. But I do think it's part of, you know, maybe you're not snacking late at night and you're definitely not drinking as much after dinner or with dinner. Blood sugar regulation being more kind of even, I think, is a huge piece of it. And people do report sleeping deeper and sleeping more soundly and waking up in the morning and not needing to hit the snooze button 10 times or
exactly.
Feeling far more alert without 17 cups of coffee. So that's a huge benefit.
Indeed. And so, but you do mention pitfalls. And your book actually covers this, because for me, it wasn't that much of a profound change. I didn't go from like a horrendous diet. Mm-hmm. I was sort of, you know, already three quarters of the way there. But I did experience a little bit of a brownout, I have to say, in the beginning, because it was almost like I was switching fuel source. And it took a while for my body, you know, like a hybrid car, you know, to kind of go to switch from one power source to another. And that was a short period. It was about a week. But some people kind of hit the wall when they make these dramatic changes. What's that like?
Yeah, it can be really, really tough. And we try to spell it out really clearly, because we don't want to promise that it's going to be all like sunshine and rainbows and ponies and then have you get into day three and be tired and cranky and lethargic and craving and wonder what the heck is going on or what's wrong with you, whether you're doing the program wrong. You're not doing it wrong, but there you're talking about a lot of changes. If you're coming from a standard American diet, even one that's, quote, healthy, based in whole grains and low-fat everything, switching to a Whole30 approach is a really big change to your system. And so, you know, your blood sugar has to catch up. Like you said, there's this sort of lull between being able to use fat as fuel and not giving your body so much sugar all the time, where you're going to be lethargic. Your brain will probably stage a revolt because it doesn't like getting the rewards that you used to give it. You may be slightly inconvenienced in terms of the amount of preparation it takes, or wondering how you're going to handle social situations. So there can be a lot to handle. And we do have a really long chapter in the 30 book that we call the Whole 30 timeline, where we prepare you for all of the various stages that you're likely to encounter so that you can make a plan for how to handle them if they do hit you.
Indeed. So one of the, I think, as a physician, I think one of the biggest health challenges that faces most Americans, and now we're seeing it in younger and younger Americans, is obesity with the accompanying cardiovascular and diabetes risk. We call it diabesity. We call it metabolic syndrome, syndrome X. Is this type of diet well suited to address that?
Well, I should be asking you that question, Dr. Hoffman.
It's but, a rhetorical you know, question because I know the answer, but I'm going to.
I think that it is. I think that a diet that focuses on real, whole, nutrient-dense, unprocessed food, a diet designed to minimize systemic inflammation, where you're not restricting calories and you're not, you know, on some crazy induction period, mm-hmm. I think that's healthy for just about everybody.
Yeah. No, I agree. And I think, you know, just as case in point, you know, this my investigation of this diet has had a ripple effect because I've shared it with my podcast listeners. I've shared it in my newsletter. And interestingly, the guy who's going to edit this podcast, and he's well aware of this, I can out him. I won't mention him by name. Is a guy who's been suffering from metabolic syndrome issues for much of his adult life, and he wrote the most astounding testimonial because he kind of got it by osmosis. I didn't try to proselytize him. I just wrote about it. And he said, well, you know, that's interesting. If, you know, Dr. Hoffman's talking about it, I'm going to give it a shot. And he's had a real life transformation around this. He's, for the first time, been able to sustain a diet. He's failed so many diets before. He's lost scads and scads of weight. His blood sugar and blood pressure are really turning around. It's very exciting to see these profound health effects in people who are not dieting, because it's not, there's nothing in the book that says, you know, measure, this is like 1,200 calories or something, you know, put your food on a scale or something like that, mm-hmm. or, you know, order these pre-measured packets from our central Whole30 dispensary and don't eat anything else. It's just eat these foods and don't eat these other foods.
Yep, that's exactly right. It's kind of like the anti-diet. That's the way I like to describe it. So, you know, we want to get you back in touch with a natural relationship with food, getting back in touch with your body's natural regulatory mechanisms, the one that are supposed to tell you whether you're hungry, whether you're full. And we want this to be really sustainable. We want the habits that you build during your Whole30 to carry you into life after.
Right. So let's talk about that transition, because, okay, say you do the 30-day challenge, or like me, you like it and you do it, you know, 2 or 3 months, but then, you know, it's vacation time, or, you know, you're opening up the summer cottage, and, you know, things are going to change. Life is going to get a little more logistically challenging, and, you know, you want to have an ice cream here and there. What's your suggestion for people to carry the message forward if they've benefited from this approach?
And that's what the entirety of the new book is about. It's about what to do when the 30 days are over. I want you to enjoy the ice cream. I want you to enjoy everything that you've decided is special enough, delicious enough, worth it enough that you want to indulge in it from time to time. I'm just asking you to do it very consciously and very deliberately, with the same skills and using the same tools that you learned in the Whole30. In that moment, do you really want the ice cream? Is it going to mess you up to the point where the consequences aren't worth the momentary hit of pleasure? If you do want it, how much of it do you need to eat to satisfy the experience? Can you truly stay in the moment and savor it instead of letting the sweet hit rush to your brain, find yourself hoovering 2 cones because you gave yourself permission? We want to change that relationship such that mm-hmm. you're always in this really effortless, sort of conscious, aware, balance with foods that you choose to indulge in and then your regular daily diet. And there's no guilt or shame around those food choices. There's no morality. It's not good. It's not bad. It's just conscious, deliberate decisions to live your life in a balance that you've decided feels sustainable.
Indeed. And, some of that comes from the reset that happens with us, because I've noticed that, on a couple of occasions, since the actual, induction phase was over, I had some leftover chocolate. And normally I would go through, volumes of this chocolate. And I found that I could satisfy myself with a square or two of, and this is not the 99 or 100% chocolate that can be used during the Whole 30 per se, but chocolate that's, say, 70% or 85%, it's got a little bit of sugar in it, so technically it's a violation. But the reset has allowed me to take a little more, shall we say, objective approach to these types of foods that ordinarily would kind of open up the floodgates for just, let's have the whole bar.
Yeah. You really understand this concept. The reset is at the heart of everything. It's not just about changing your habits and changing your emotional relationship with food. The rules and the structure of the Whole 30 will change you physiologically. It changed your taste buds. Oh, yeah. It will change your blood sugar regulation. It changes your hormonal balance to the point where, from the inside out, these new healthy habits and these new healthy foods that you've become accustomed to eating are more desirable. They're more pleasurable. The stuff that I went back to after my first Whole 30 that I couldn't wait to get back to, the Dannon Light and Fit sweetened low-fat yogurts, all of a sudden tasted like chemicals. I couldn't eat them.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if that's your experience, it makes sticking to healthy foods so much easier, because it's not a treat if it tastes like junk to you now, or you don't need anywhere near as much to satisfy the experience.
No, there really was a refinement of my taste buds. And this is actually something that I think has been demonstrated, is the less sugar you have, the more acutely you can taste the natural sweetness that's inherent in fruit, which ordinarily in the past you might have found boring because you needed to get this sugar shaker out and put it on those strawberries because the strawberries were tasted bitter. Once you turn down the volume on your sugar intake, I even eat a salad now and I taste the sweetness of the natural ingredients of the salad, the fresh tomatoes.
Yes.
And the balsamic vinegar, which has a sweet flavor, although there's no sugar added.
Exactly. And people will say, 3 weeks into their Whole 30, I had a sweet potato today. I had no idea that they were so sweet. Or I ate blueberries and it was like candy. So it does. It resensitizes your taste buds once you pull out all of this super normally stimulating stuff that's been totally overwhelming your body and your brain.
Mm-hmm. So let's get a little bit into some science here. I have a feeling that some of the changes, the mental and physical changes that are associated with the Whole 30 are mediated through the microbiome. Without getting too graphic, I got to say that, I never really had digestive problems, but my digestion is, it runs like a Swiss clock now. I think that there's, the food that you feed to your intestinal flora changes the composition of your intestinal flora with a lot of different health ramifications, even psychological benefits.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And again, that's one of those things that can definitely get worse before it gets better. But what we're doing with the Whole 30 is eliminating a lot of foods that are very commonly problematic in the gut. So we're talking about foods that impact both the small intestine and your gut bacterial population. And your body will build up all kinds of defense mechanisms and compensations to deal with inflammatory foods in the gut. And when you pull those out, sometimes things go, a little bit backwards. But eventually what happens is that everything comes back into balance. Your digestive tract and your gut flora kind of repopulate healthfully and they heal. And many people do find digestion is so much better. There's no more bloating. There's no more gas. There's no more stomach pain. Things are kind of, like you said, running like clockwork.
And this is actually, in many ways, this diet is akin to a diet that I've recommended for ulcerative colitis and Crohn's disease for many years. It's the specific carbohydrate diet, which is a grain-free diet and eliminates a lot of fermentable carbohydrates. It's not the same, but in there's a lot of overlap, and so there are a lot of benefits for patients with gastro problems. Okay, so what's today's Intelligent Medicine call to action? I'm looking at the website for Whole30.com. And I see there, the books are listed there, Whole 30, and it starts with food. There's also wonderful testimonials there. There's community. There's a forum. There's a blog, which I guess you're continually adding to. There's mm-hmm. even advice for women contemplating pregnancy and doing this type of dietary approach.
Yes, we have a lot of resources on Whole30.com, an awful lot of resources. So, you know, the first thing to do if you're new to the program is go to the homepage, Whole30.com, and there's four buttons that you'll see. The first one says, I'm new, what is the Whole30? And we'll kind of walk you through step by step the basics of the program, how you might get started, some of the things you want to do to sort of prepare, the resources that you'll want to gather before you begin. Everything is also outlined in incredible detail in the Whole30 book. So that's under our books tab. Everything you need from getting started with the program to preparation to what to expect. And we have more than 100 Whole30 compliant recipes in that book as well. So you'll definitely never be bored.
Also, I think I would advise people to also look at some of the resources where you can order these types of food ingredients. Because if you're going to embark on this, I think it's best to study it, learn it, and, prepare for D-Day. You know, it's kind of like invasion preparation because it's best to have some of these ingredients and resources lined up so that you can really hit the ground running when you start rather than floundering.
Yes, that's so smart. Yeah, we actually offer Whole30 starter kits through Barefoot Provisions, and a fabulous online store who is just so good about making sure they have a ton of Whole30 compliant options that you can order all in one place. So you can do an emergency food kit with lots of different jerky bars and vegetables mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. kind of in between meals for when you're late at the office. You can do they have a new, what they're calling a fat kit. So if you want to get prepared with cooking fats and eating fats, things like the duck fat you spoke about and coconut oil and avocado oil mayo, that's actually good for you.
Yeah, I ordered that.
Load up on that as well. Yeah, mm-hmm, it's so good. Yeah, it's great.
Because if you told me I'd have to give up mayo altogether, that would be serious trouble. So I gave up the canola. The ersatz olive oil mayo, which actually is kind of a Trojan horse for a lot of canola oil, and I ordered the avocado mm-hmm. oil mayo, which is expensive, but it tastes good, and it's the perfect accoutrement to leftover salmon. So
exactly. You can also make your own. We have a recipe in the Whole30 book. It's about 5 minutes and just five ingredients to make your own delicious homemade mayo, too. So, and that makes you feel kind of like a kitchen genius. It's like a good self-confidence builder.
Indeed. I haven't tackled that yet, but maybe that's next. So first, I want to extend my personal gratitude to you because, while I've recognized for a long time the benefits of the paleo diet and, in fact, have prescribed it, the Whole30 was a catalyst for me to explore it personally. And this has had ramifications for friends, family, radio listeners, people who follow me on Facebook and on Twitter. And it truly is a viral phenomenon. So I suggest that, at the very least, take the challenge. Give it a shot. Do it for 30 days. You won't be sorry.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed reading all of your Whole30 updates as you were posting them. I'm always so appreciative of medical professionals who I feel like really get the program and embrace it with the understanding that you have. So thank you so much for your support. It means a lot.
Well, thank you. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest, Melissa Hartwig, co-developer of the Whole30 diet program. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.